first Region 3 Planning and Policy Council meeting of 2021. This is Kirby Fye with the department, though if you join via WebEx, it says Amy Holland, but it's Kirby Fye. Welcome, everyone. It looks like we have 15 participants on the call. Deanna, maybe we could just do another attendance or roll call at the end if we see anyone join midway through the meeting.
That works.
Okay, great. I just have a few things to go over before we move into attendance. The first thing is to please mute your phones unless you're asking a question or speaking, because it gives a lot of feedback if the phone isn't muted. Also, if you could please state your name before speaking, it's helpful when taking the minutes. And speaking of minutes, this call will also be recorded per Governor Lee's Executive Order 71, and it will be available on the department website within the next day or two. I'm going to go ahead and start with attendance. First, I'll go through the names of individuals who have joined via WebEx because I can see their name, and then we'll move to individuals who have called in. So like I said, this is Kirby Fye with the department. On the call, I see Allie Cohn, Avis Easley with the department, Burke Brewer, Deanna King, Eve Knight, Gina Turley, Jashari White, Jessica Foster, Kathy Milam, Kurt Hipple with the department, Rachel Gieringer, Sarah Waldrop. I know we have Rhonda Moore who has called in. Is there anyone else who has called in? Can you please state your name to let us know you're on the call?
Good morning. This is Donna Maddox, same center.
Hi, Donna. So Donna Maddox on the call.
Missy Venson from Volunteer Behavioral Health.
Did you say Missy Venson?
Venson? Uh-huh.
Welcome.
Thank you.
This is Jack Blum from Park Center.
Hi, Jack. Can you say your last name again?
Blum, B-L-U-M. Start with a B. B as in boy. Sorry, weird name.
Thanks, Jack.
Leah Pastula with Volunteer Behavioral Health.
Hi, Leah.
Hello.
Hi, this is Jen Talbert, Bureau Health.
Hi, Jen.
Hey.
Good morning. This is Nicole Bates, Region 3 Mental Health Cooperative.
Nicole.
Hey, Kirby.
Is there anyone else we've missed that joined via call, phone call? Looks like Debbie Loudermilk's on the call as well. All right. Well, Deanna, I'll go ahead and hand it over to you.
Okay, great. Good morning, everybody. Happy New Year. I am needing a motion for an approval of the October 15 minutes. They were in the email, a couple of emails that Rhonda sent out this week. Can I get a first?
This is Donna, so move.
And a second?
This is Nicole, I second.
Thank you. We will move to Kirby for your department report.
All right, me again. Hold on 1 second. All right, so we have a few updates, excuse me, since we last met in October. The first update I have listed is the department's receiving a new federal grant to expand criminal justice alternatives for Tennesseans living with addiction. The $6 million grant from the U.S. Department of Justice will cover 10 project sites, including Anderson, Blount, Bradley, Cheatham, Cock, Dixon, Grundy, Montgomery, Roan, and Tifton counties. Services under the grant begin with a collaborative community review of services under a standardized model called sequential intercept modeling. The county-specific report is then used to prioritize needs and make decisions about spending additional funding. The new grant builds on a previous $6.5 million grant from the Department of Justice that is serving 11 Tennessee counties. Five of the project sites for the new grant inquired about services and expressed interest after hearing about the successes of the locations in the first grant. Additional strategies employed by the grant following the sequential intercept mapping event include law enforcement and other first responder diversion programs for people experiencing substance use, embedding social services with law enforcement in order to rapidly respond to drug overdoses, and evidence-based treatment such as medication-assisted treatment, as well as recovery support services, including transitional or recovery housing and peer recovery support services. The department, as well as the Department of Health, are kicking off a new campaign centered around the risk of drug overdose and suicide during the winter holidays. The campaign, called Resilient Tennessee, focuses on building resilience and strengthening community connections to prevent the tragic loss of life to overdose and suicide. Behavioral health experts worry the climate around the COVID-19 pandemic may worsen the rise in overdoses traditionally associated with the winter holidays, and could also result in increased death from suicide. Through media messaging around overdose and suicide prevention, social media outreach, and virtual trainings and events, the campaign seeks to empower Tennesseans with the tools and knowledge to overcome the personal challenges they face, watch out for and help those around them, and emerge on the other side stronger than ever. For more information, including a calendar of events and other resources that are available through this campaign, please visit www.tntogether.com. The department is also receiving a new federal grant to expand the system of care across Tennessee network. The four-year, $12 million grant from SAMHSA expands SOCAT services to 13 new rural counties for service availability in all 95 Tennessee counties. The new grant will build upon lessons learned throughout two decades of system of care implementation in Tennessee counties. Over the past 3 years, SOCAT teams across the state utilizing high fidelity wraparound services have been able to maintain a 90% success rate of keeping children, youth, and young adults in their homes and within their communities. The Community Mental Health Agency partner providers engaged in this work are Frontier, Helen Ross McNabb, Mental Health Cooperative, Pathways Behavioral Health, Professional Care Services, Tennessee Voices, and Volunteer Behavioral Health Care Services. The FY20 Joint Annual Report between the Planning and Policy Councils and the Department is complete and has been posted to the Department website. I've included the link where you can access this on the Department website. And Rhonda, as always, I'll send this to you so you can copy and paste it for your minutes. And last, but certainly not least, I'm sure we'll be talking about it today, the 2021 needs assessment worksheets should be completed and submitted back to the department via email to me on or before April 15th, 2021. Typically, these would be due April 1st, but we have moved it back 2 weeks, so they are due on April 15th, 2021. Please make sure to include data to support your region's needs. You can also utilize the Fast Facts portal, which I've included the link in this for how you can access that. But as always, you are welcome to use any data resource you find that can support your identified need. And that is what I have.
Okay, thank you, Kirby. Our next item is the needs assessment development. And as she stated, it's due April 15th, which that is the date of our next meeting. And so I know that we have committees on here except for Amy, but she has notified me that they have actually been working on this as well. But it is really imperative that the next subcommittee meetings that you guys have, you as the chair and co-chairs, are completing one for mental health and one for substance use and submitting that into me before the 15th so that we can get to Kirby and she can provide any corrections that need to be made, et cetera. We will be sending that out with everyone, as Kirby had stated. Make sure that you guys have what you need for that. Does anybody have any questions on the needs assessment? I know that we've done this. We do this every year, and really this is the purpose of the committee at large, is to submit these needs assessments and to create and make awareness of what our community needs are to the department. Any questions on that?
Yeah, hey, it's Jen Talbert with Spiro Health. I would like to request to be added to the subcommittee for substance use.
So we don't have a subcommittee for substance use. We have an adult committee and a child and adolescent committee, and both of them create a mental health and a substance use. So would you want to be added to the adult committee or the child and adolescent committee?
The adult committee, please.
Okay. We will make sure that your information is sent over to Connie. I don't think she, I heard that she's on, but Debbie is on.
Yes, we would love to have you, Jen.
So we will get. Great. Anybody else have any questions or feedback about the needs assessment? Okay, this won't be our last reminder about this. We'll be sending out additional reminders, probably monthly, to assess where we are at. So be creating that in your subcommittee, and co-chairs and chairs are responsible for submitting those to me. Kirby, do you have anything else that you would like to add related to the needs assessment?
The only thing I would add is, and I could share this if you need me all to, I can send you the link to access it. Last year, so the 2020 needs assessment summary is on the department website, as well as the FY21 three-year plan. So as you may know, the needs assessments are used in developing the three-year plan each year. So if you take a look at last year's needs assessment, as well as the FY21 plan, I have listed in the FY21 plan pages and programs that were taken from the 2020 needs assessment. So you can see if a need that you identified, that was identified in your region, has been incorporated into the plan. It might not be, you know, word for word, verbatim, the need identified, but the department does look at this when they're developing their programs. So they might just take bits and pieces from needs that are identified to slowly work towards it. So I encourage you to just take a look at it to see if it's something that's already in the process of being worked on. If it's not, it doesn't mean it never will be. It just might mean this year, you know, it might not have been in the budget. It could be for a multitude of reasons. So if it is still a need that is in your region and it hasn't been incorporated into the plan, I don't want you to not list it, think you can't put it down there. If you need to put it down again, it's still a need, by all means do so. Just make sure you have updated data to support it.
Thank you, Kirby. Anybody else have anything else they want to add to that before we move on? Okay, let's move to the committee reports. I know we have Donna and Debbie on. Is Connie on today?
Dina, she's. Oh, sorry, Donna. I think she's trying to get on, yeah.
Okay. Well, Nicole, do you want to give an update on the legislative, and we can come back when Connie's back on?
Yeah, I can go ahead.
Okay, great.
All right. Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for those of you that participated with the legislative subcommittee. We did have a meeting on the 7th of January. And we had some good participation, but of course, there's always an opportunity for more folks to be involved in the process. So, of course, I can't move forward without putting in an extended invitation to anyone who's interested in participating with the committee. And of course, we have lots of representation from the Southeast Tennessee area. And so we would obviously like to extend our representation. And so those of you that may have some contact partners outside of our local area, of course, we would like to extend the invitation for participation to those. So just let me know and I'd be happy to extend the invitation. To begin with, what we did is we reviewed the 2020 needs assessment that was completed to identify the areas of focus, and the 2020 substance abuse need that was identified was to determine the identify area for focus related to the increasing the number of and access to residential and detox beds. Members reviewed the needs assessment, and that was continued to be identified as a need for Region 3. It was consistently found as a need for 2016 all the way through 2020. The discussion that we had as a group was really around, was the need to create more beds, or was it really just funding resources for indigent, uninsured, and underinsured beds? From the local providers that participated, there was some anecdotal experience that the access to the beds varied by location and the wait times varied by location. And so next step from the group is to complete data collection with the currently indigent beds available for substance use and detox for a review with the group. Any comments, questions surrounding that topic? Okay. Please feel free to interject if there are any questions that come up. Also, we discussed the 2020 mental health assessment that was completed and identified previously was a need for data sharing. And the group discussed that the need for data transparency among grant supported programs continued. This was something that was discussed previously. The group also indicated that there are other requirements for grant-funded programs to publicly share data, and the group discussed that without the data sharing, it is difficult to ascertain the gaps in care within our region as well as across the state. So the next steps were really to complete data collection with the currently available data to identify any areas of focus. That's the next steps that we have identified as a group. Of course, as the child and adolescent and adult teams continue to do their needs assessment, we will incorporate that information as it is shared. But our next meeting right now is Thursday, February the 18th, and that's all I have.
Nicole, thank you so much. I'm excited that we have a operating legislative subcommittee, as I know for a while we were without one. So I thank you and your team for giving us that great update and working collaboratively with the adult and child and adolescent subcommittees with the needs assessment. Any questions for Nicole from the larger group? If there is anyone who wants to join, please let me know or type in the chat and we can get you added to her subcommittee. Connie, was that you who joined us?
Yes, ma'am, it was.
Hi, Connie. Would you be willing to give us an update on the adult committee?
I would, but we really not met the last time. I've been overwhelmed with things and hadn't gotten the meetings. That was my fault. But we will meet in the coming week. With the holidays and everything, I just really fell off the wagon. So, we did get a few responses after the last meeting of people that you know are interested. And I think Donna got that group of emails or names. So I'll get on that and be better this next quarter.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. If you once you guys meet in the next couple of months before, if you can meet in February, if you can just send us a quick update of where you're at with the needs assessment, that really needs to be the focus of the meeting. Remember, one mental health, one substance abuse. And if there's anybody who wants to join the adolescent committee, I know that Jen wants to. Was there anybody else that wanted to join?
The adult committee? Or the adult
yeah, I think. Deanna,
sorry.
Yeah, adult.
Adult. Okay. Amy is not able to be with us today for the Child and Adolescent Committee. And so she gave us a report of what they've been working on. They have been working on the needs assessments in their group. And one of the things that she wanted to say is that if you have any colleagues or contacts in other areas of the region, Cookeville, Crossville, and the Plateau, to please reach out. You can get that information to me, and I can get that to Amy so that she can invite them to these meetings. And then, Burke, did you want to say anything? I noticed that you're on and you were in attendance of the Child and Adolescent Committee. I don't know, I'm putting you on the spot here, but I didn't know if there was anything else that significantly came out of that subcommittee back in December.
I don't really have anything else to add. I think Amy's report is pretty sufficient. Thank you, though.
Okay, great. Okay, anything else for subcommittee reports that we need to discuss? Okay, let's go to our providers and community announcements. Let's start with anyone from hospital or mental health. You can go ahead and introduce yourself and then where you're from and any updates that you have, or announcements that you have.
Hi, this is Eve Knight. I'll go since I'm with the hospital, with Erlanger Behavioral Health Hospital. I did want to just share that we do have a new virtual IOP, intensive outpatient program for adults. It's mental health specific, and it does specialize in people that have had, you know, recent suicide attempts or ideations, or people that have depression, PTSD, mood disorders that tend to swing towards the depressive side. So it's totally virtual, and it also includes med management with one of our psychiatrists, Dr. Eller. So it's a really great program. And then I did also want to share, because I did hear about, you know, the mention of an increase in suicides because of the pandemic. And I wanted to share that our data, our year-over-year data, is really no different from last year. And so if there's an increase out there in people experiencing mental health crisis, it's not reflected in the data that shows that people are seeking help for mental health crisis. And I think that might be a need or a point that we can look at as a group, that, you know, if we're experiencing a 30% increase in suicidality in our population, we are not seeing that increase and people who are presenting to get help, and we may be losing some people, or we may need to seek some alternative avenues for connecting those people to help, identifying them and connecting them to help. I also wanted to share, too, that all of our programs are currently operational, all of our units, adolescent, adult, dual diagnosis, and geriatric. Yeah, that's it. That's all I got.
Anyone else for mental health? I know we have a lot of people on here. Any updates or anything they would like to share?
Deanna, was that still, are you still on the hospitals or general mental health?
Hospital or mental health.
Okay, I'll just make a comment, if I may. AIM Center went back to all virtual services in accordance with Governor's Lee Executive Order, I think it was number 70, and we're supporting our members virtually, exclusively virtually, like now in the community. But that, and we await, actually we're quite hoping that the order will continue, will be extended any day now with this increase, particularly with this COVID and this new variant that is so rapidly spreading. But we await that. But something that is certainly on my mind, and I assume on a lot of other mental health providers, and I hope our advocacy from our Consumers Association, TennCare has approved the use of telephonic or audio services only for certain behavioral health services through the end of March. And I know there's a lot of work already going on, you know, and brokering to help to try to get them to extend that. And there's even some work going underway to try to get something legislatively done. But I have to say to this group, I am very concerned about our mental health consumers across the state as they try to access both recovery and treatment services. If there is not an extension past March the 31st, we have many people who, even with, we've got tablets and computers and hotspots out to our members. I can just speak for AIM Center, but I assume this goes across the board. And we have trained and we have retrained and we're doing everything we can to help our members be able to access services, both their treatment services and their recovery services through us electronically. And they are not successful to do so. And I really am concerned about if we don't get some kind of extension or something that would happen legislatively, you know, the long-term effect on our consumers. I really see a greater opportunity for isolation to fast occur if we cannot have telephone contact with our members or be paid for telephone contact with those that have been care. So I just, you know, I feel like I have to say it to the group, and I hope everybody is on the bandwagon also on this endeavor. Thanks.
Hey, this is Kathy Milam. I'm president of NAMI Chattanooga, and I would just like to reiterate that we support families with mental illness who are affected by mental illness. We advocate and we educate. We have a helpline, and I am concerned also to follow up with Donna Maddox, that the services for our mental health community are lacking, and there seems to be such a tremendous amount of money and services for addiction, and many times mental illness starts before that. So we have a helpline, and we have classes, and we advocate, and I can put that in the chat. Thank you.
Hi, this is Kivra Arkal-Bryant from United Healthcare Community Plan. I apologize, I joined half an hour too late. It was on the wrong slot on my calendar. But I just want you to know that we are here. We're still sponsoring events in the community. Everything seems to be online and virtual these days, but we still support community sponsorships. So if there's anything coming up, please let me know.
Thank you very much. Anyone else for mental health that would like to speak? Okay. Connie, do you have a CAB update for us?
Yes. I lost what I was going to talk. What I was going to tell you. There is a new group that has been formed for the Certified Peer Recovery Specialist. It's called TAPS, Tennessee Association of Peer Support Specialists, and it is a professional association like many licensed groups have. They've really been working hard to get that together. The website is open, or they're working on the website, but the Facebook page is open, and it's you pay a small membership to be a member of that, and there are 391 people that have signed up on the Facebook page. They're hoping to be able to advocate for peer recovery specialist for our consumers' needs and things like that a little bit better by having that group to kind of push some things. And I agree with Donna, and we're trying to, across the state, people are doing things different ways in the peer support centers. But we're trying to go virtual, and we don't have electronics to give to the clients that don't have them. The group meetings, they get really discouraged trying to meet in those groups online because they can't see each other, they can't be together. We really are struggling as peers out here. Try to have that socialization and keep from isolating. My staff calls, in my center, the staff calls all the members 2 or 3 times a week and has individual one-on-one conversations, but we can't get them to join the group. And so I'm just hoping this thing will end soon before they really get in trouble, because it really, really is affecting consumers across the state, like Donna said. So if you guys have anything that you can do to help advocate, this is it, that we can continue to do the virtual services that we are doing, and hang on to the people we do have, and we'd really appreciate it. But that is a big issue. I want to let you know about the tax. I guess that's it.
Thank you, Connie. Any comments or questions for Connie from anyone?
We're also starting to work on the CPRS conference for next year. I mean, for the end of the year.
Okay. Anyone from Blue Care or 10 Care Select on? Okay. Our next meeting is April 15, and I would like to have someone present. I do believe someone has contacted me before, so I need to find and see if he would be available. But I would like to make these meetings similar to how they were when they were in person, and I know that virtual is hard. And so if anybody would like to present during the next meeting or knows of anything that they would be interested in hearing about, or you have a connection, please let me know. The next meeting will be my last meeting for a bit, as I will be going out on maternity leave. But Gail and Rhonda will be there to assist, but I will be here for the next one. So I would like to have a presentation if anybody has anyone in mind or anybody would like to volunteer.
Deanna, this is Debbie with CADIS. Hey, I'm sorry. I know we went from mental health hospitals on to advisory boards and 10 care products, but I was waiting to share some information from CADIS.
Off of my agenda, so anything you want to say, go for it, Debbie.
Well, you know me. Sorry. I wanted to interject 2 things. One, we may can be a presenter at the next meeting. I would like to check with our marketing director. I would like to possibly show everyone virtually our new detox unit. This really speaks to what Nicole was saying. the need for detox beds becoming a continued need in our area. So let me offer that as a possibility, if that's of interest, that we can do a virtual presentation and tour of our new detox unit. We had a company come in and do a video for us because we can't invite people to come into the facility, but it's impressive and it's very nice, and nothing like opening a new unit in a pandemic. So if anyone's interested in that, Deanna, just email me if that's an appropriate presentation. So that may not be, but just wanted to throw that out there. The other thing I would like to kind of loop back into is tell you a little bit about some updates with CADIS and some concerns. I know there's a couple of people, Cooper's on here, and some other things from the 10 care changes. There's some pretty significant 10 care changes to the substance abuse world coming down the pike. And one of those has been delayed now till February 1st, but that is fast approaching. It was supposed to go into effect on January 1st. And so what has happened is the Bureau of 10 care has, there's going to be a 30-day limit on substance abuse bed days in a rolling calendar year for members that need detox or residential. It is my understanding those are going to be combined. Cooper may know more about that, but it is our understanding that those 30 days would likely be combined. So what this means is that we will now have a 30-day limit, rolling calendar year, not calendar year. So if somebody comes into services in June and they use 14 days and they come back in December and use 14 days, they are not eligible for treatment until June of the next year. So it's a rolling calendar year limit. So a lot of concerns about that from the substance abuse world. And I just want this committee to be aware that that was information that was rolled out to us by the Director of Behavioral Health Operations with the Bureau, Mary Shelton. She's been very gracious to hear our concerns. But, you know, if that comes into effect, and it seems like it will, then there's going to be a decreased accessibility to people with 10 care for inpatient substance abuse services. Not only that, to be considered a provider now, you have to offer MAT services, and that's going to exclude a lot of people from being a preferred provider with 10 care, unfortunately. Fortunately for CADIS, we are okay. We do offer MAT services. So there's some issues with 10 care coming down the pike for substance use disorder treatment. So that's an issue I wanted to make sure we're all aware of. And I know just enough about that to be dangerous, so I don't know enough to articulate all the ins and outs of that, just that we are looking at some limitations that we've not dealt with in the past. So in saying that, I did want to say that we are continuing to admit to all levels of care. We are admitting to adult detox. We are admitting to adult residential. All of our intensive outpatient programs are virtual. They do still have to come on site for drug screens, and they do have to come on site for the admission, but we are virtual after that. We've done this for almost a year now. I never thought I would say that, but we started virtual intensive outpatient on March 23rd of 2020, and never thought we would be in this, you know, approaching the 12-month mark. But we are, you know, perfecting that to the best of our ability, and we have continued to do MAT services and intensive outpatient services in the outpatient world. Inpatient services are still running as planned. We did open a new detox unit, and to speak to what Nicole said about funding, you know, CADIS is one of the providers in this region that does get some money for indigent detox, and we have asked for additional funding so we could serve more members that are indigent, especially with the unemployment rate going through the roof now, people unemployed, those with insurance no longer have insurance. We're looking at a lot of real critical situations for people that need treatment. So some of that is attached to funding and not necessarily bed space. So, for example, we have 26 new detox beds here. We continue to have 56 residential beds. So we have a high capacity, And we are, of course, doing all the mitigation efforts. We test everybody coming in the building now. We have gone to testing everybody coming in the building, and they quarantine until we get their lab test back as well. So because we have had a couple of outbreaks here that we're trying to contain. So we are continuing to revise those infection control protocols and admit when and where we can. So I just kind of wanted to know everybody to know that. The big changes for us appear to be around some of these 10 care changes that could go into effect here in a couple of weeks. That's it for me.
Great update, Debbie. Does anybody want to speak on that? Anything that she had said?
Could we?
Jen,
no, go ahead, Jen. Do you have more info about that?
I do. I just wanted to, I've actually got the memo, and I could actually email that out to everyone just to give you a little more detail on that. And this was a federal law that was handed down to the states, and it is my understanding that actually the states only had to do 15 days per year, and Tennessee 10 Care put things into place, met certain criteria and whatnot, so that it could be 30 days. So I just wanted to say, at least we, you know, we're doing what we can as a state. That's my understanding. But yes, I can send out this memo if you guys want me to. It's the 10 Care memo, and it's from Mary Shelton.
That would be great.
Okay, I will do that.
Yeah, if you can get it to either me or Kirby, we can get it to Rhonda and get it sent out to everyone.
Yep, I will do that now.
I wonder if there's an opportunity to engage some of our local ERs to help advocate or at least come up with a community plan, because if this is about to happen, you know, starting in the next few weeks, the hospital ERs will bear the burden, I think, of picking up where, you know, where the other agencies that do detox are not able to do it. I mean, that's limiting a service that, you know, it's not a luxury service. You don't have a choice. If you need to detox, you need to detox. So they, you know, it's limiting paying for it, just limits where they can get the detox. And I guess I would predict that those people then will still end up in the ER when they're unable to access detox in other places. So I wonder if it would be if we could maybe call like an emergency meeting of the Region 3 people that are involved with adult detox and substance use, and see if we can have some sort of meeting with the local ER directors to just discuss. And I say that because one of the things that we have noticed with our COVID cases rising is the emergency rooms are not able to handle the psychiatric patients that don't have any medical comorbidities. And so they're oftentimes rescinding CONs and sending them out just because they don't have the capacity in the ERs to handle them. So this is already, there's already strains on our local ERs. I feel like if we don't have a plan for people that are presenting needing detox, we're going to end up with lots more people dying on the street.
You know, we used to have a lot of hospitals that would attend this meeting. Eve, do you have anyone from the ERs that you could invite? And I know Chelsea Jones is on the call from Crisis. Who else was on for adult crisis? I know someone was on from volunteer. Could we potentially pull our contacts and make sure they have the invite to this meeting to make sure that we have more representation of our medical hospitals? And I know they're really busy, but just so that they make sure that they have the outlet to us.
Yeah, absolutely. I can forward that on. I can forward their contacts on so you all can get that invite. And I do feel like I've had several conversations with the emergency rooms, especially lately, about how, you know, they just don't have the capacity to handle the psychiatric patients. I think that it would be a good time with this new piece of detox info to say, hey, we need to have some sort of emergency meeting. We need to have some sort of action plan. Yeah.
So, and from my perspective, Eve, CADIS has been very involved in this from a legislative perspective. We're involved with a group in Nashville. We have a lot of efforts going into figuring out how to make this work. Because like Jen said, this is a federal law, I'm not sure there's much that can be done. Tennessee has taken it from 15 to 30 days, which is great. But the machine that we're up against right now, and we're involved in a group called TADIS. Some of y'all know that group in Nashville, and they have been very proactive with challenging some of this. So there are some things going on. What I would encourage is people to get involved with, like TAMHO, TADIS, the Hospital Association. Those bigger groups of people are going to get more traction, okay? I'm not saying Region 3 should not have meetings, but there's some of those larger voices, they have bigger microphones, honestly. Those are the people that you know, the Bureau listens to, maybe. But anyway, that's just my two cents. The hospital associations, I would love to have them at this meeting, too. But, again, this is, like Jen said, federal issues that TennCare can't change much of this on their level. They had to interpret that and put that into place for Medicaid for the state of Tennessee.
That's my concern. Hearing that it's a federal law, there's really, if anything comes out of the advocacy, you know, it'll be, what, a year, 2 years as we face changing our entire administration. If it goes into place in a couple of weeks, you're absolutely right. It's a big machine, and it takes a long time to turn that ship. But, you know, I'm sure you guys are great, Debbie, and I'm sure you guys are preparing as much as you can. You know, have you engaged with the hospitals to help them know that, hey, these changes are coming, and see if there can be some sort of collaborative plan with the medical hospitals?
I would hope TennCare's done that.
I doubt it, because I've not heard this from any of my contacts at the hospitals, and I'm sure that they would be concerned about it if they knew.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we got the memos, we got the word December, so I would imagine somebody on that hospital end has to know and be aware of it on the hospital's end, just like we got that information from the Bureau. But, you know, honestly, I don't know what kind of communication's been done to the hospitals in the state. I'm not aware of what that's entailed. It might be a question for Ms. Shelton to ask how they communicated that to the hospitals.
So maybe locally I can see if I can connect you to some of the contacts at the emergency rooms that we work with, and see, you know, just kind of flesh out and see what can be done as a local community, how we can help support CADIS and support the other detox providers.
I'll have limited time for that, Eve, honestly, but sure, you know, I mean, I'm, like most people, I'm, you know, with what's going on with this pandemic and telehealth and everything else, I've got, detox is not really my area. I'll be glad to connect somebody else in my organization for that, possibly. I'm just on this committee, but the director of the detox unit might be a better fit for that. She's a long-time ER nurse as well, but you know that there may be other people. I guess what I'm saying, that they're more appropriate for any of those kind of efforts than myself. But I'm glad to ask those questions if there needs to be any kind of sub meetings. Again, there's just not much we can do about it at this point except get the word out. And I would hope that would have done some of that. Cooper, are you still on the horn here?
Yes, I'm here.
You may know more about this and know how that communication went out.
Actually, on my other laptop, I'm in a meeting with the management of United Healthcare. So as soon as that is finished, I will talk to my manager and, find out an official statement from him for you.
Yeah, I would love for, yeah, Cooper could, maybe Eve Cooper could be part of that conversation with us, you know, and educating the ERs. And I'll offer up my director of nursing as well.
Okay, great.
Okay, thank you guys. Anything else that we need to discuss before we adjourn? Okay, did anybody else join during the call that missed roll call in the beginning so that we can include you on the minutes?
That was me, Kubra, from United Healthcare.
Thank you.
Joined back.
Hey, Deanna.
Yes.
This is Kurt Tipple with the department.
Hey.
Before we adjourn, and I don't want to keep y'all from getting back to some very busy days, I just want to make sure everyone on the call knew that Ellen Abbott passed away on Monday night. I'm sure most of y'all have heard. But Ellen was our director of criminal justice initiatives in the Division of Substance Abuse, and she was involved in a car accident on Monday night. And she worked very hard for a very unrepresented population, and she's going to be sorely missed. So I want to make sure everyone in Region 3 that had worked with her, knew of her, knew and was able to reflect on the impact Ellen had. Thanks so much for letting me have a little time to talk about that.
Yeah, Kurt, thank you. I'm very sorry to hear that. Any other announcements?
This is Susan Green. I wasn't present at the roll call.
Thank you, Susan. Got you down. Anybody else? Okay, we will adjourn. It's almost 11 o'clock. Our next meeting will be April 15th. Again, a WebEx will be sent out. And if you guys have any announcements or anything you need us to get to the larger group, please feel free to send to me or Rhonda, and we'll get that out. Have an excellent Thursday, and I hope everybody has a good week. Stay healthy.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks, Sienna. Bye.